Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Ron Edwards, and this is the Don and Ron program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Beautiful evening here in our beloved city at the headwaters of the Mississippi, if you will. In fact, some call us not only having the river, the Mississippi, but we are probably the northern version of the state of Mississippi. Folks don't like it when we say that. Our co-host Don Allen will not be with us this evening for the second Wednesday in a row. He has previous engagements and et cetera. We had been hoping to have our longtime call-in associate, friend, and fellow historian, the man known as M, but due to technical difficulties, which we've not been able to overcome, we will not be able to hear from him. But because of breaking stories all day today and tonight as we speak, we have made available our telephone number for the purposes of texting, and we've received a number of texting information already with regards to problems at radio station KMOJ, 89.9 on the dial, a personnel situation which has other implications, has been festering for quite some time. About 15 minutes ago, we received a text message of confidential nature from individuals that were at what was supposedly a board meeting that was going to take place at the facility there at Penn Avenue and Broadway in North Minneapolis. This comes on what has been a very rancorous and bitter exchange over the last couple of days between the board chair, a man by the name of Frazier, who was the general counsel for the Minneapolis Board of Education until he left for greener pastures a couple of months ago, but he is still the board chair of radio station KMOJ. Now, what is at play was the dismissal of the longtime station manager, Kevin Quarles, who had earned high marks for his management of the station and keeping it on task, if you will. But for some reason, there was, as in the case of what happened in St. Paul last night, there began to be differences between Mr. Quarles and the board. And according to sources that have been very clear and concise about their allegations, which will be spoken to tomorrow at 11 o'clock in a press conference that has been called in front of the Ackerberg building there again on West Broadway and Penn Avenue North, where a group of community leaders will announce the initiation of a lawsuit against radio station KMOJ, its board of directors, and the parent corporation, the Center for Communication and Development, if you will. This has been a very ugly situation, and certainly it has been extremely hard for Mr. Quarles and another employee who was also terminated doing what was known as the month of the butcher, if you will. It appears that a couple of other employees were also terminated. Issues now about money, financing, and et cetera, as well as back rent. In fact, there has been a rumor. Now, we're saying here on KMOJ behalf, if you will, that the rumor is that the organization, the Center for Communication Development, which is the parent body of radio station KMOJ-FM, is behind on its rent obligation to the tune of better than $40,000, which seems to be difficult to understand. because it was felt that Mr. Quarles was doing a good job of keeping things moving, keeping the station active, if you will. After his termination, a former on-air host, who I do not believe is with KMOJ anymore, I think she has gone to one of the more conservative white radio stations here in the Twin Cities, Alessa Jones, was the station manager for about 2 weeks, and then she quickly departed, which should have begun to make people extremely concerned about what the heck was going on, particularly in a city that has had the terrible history that we have had with the loss of the African-American Family Services, if you will, the whole history of the tragedy of the loss of the African-American Black Museum in Minnesota, and better than $3 million that cannot really be accounted for. But, you know, leadership is working and dealing with that, they have clearly said. And so when Mr. Quarles was jettisoned, along with a couple of other employees, it began to lead to a series, almost round robin, if you will, of meetings and et cetera, with the board chair, the gentleman that we mentioned previously, who at the time of the discharge of Mr. Quarles was the general counsel, Mr. Frazier, was the general counsel for the Minneapolis Special School District Number 1. Of course, we know that they were having some real tough problems, and actually finally, just a week and a half ago, finally signed their new superintendent from Anchorage, Alaska, to a, what was it, 3-year contract? So I guess it'll take him in that situation at least 2 years to get his variance and the necessary documentation and professional credentials, which I'm kind of surprised. The man has been in the system for 25 years, was superintendent there in Anchorage, and yet he did not have the necessary credentials to be immediately certified here in the state of Minnesota to be a superintendent of the third largest school district in the state of Minnesota. But now we have this situation in which tomorrow there will be a press conference, as we said earlier, in which there will be some fairly serious allegations, if you will, as it pertains to the rights of Mr. Quarles and other employees who apparently have become the targets for what appears to be almost a civil war, a holy war going on inside of the People's Station. Now, things began to come to a head apparently in the last, oh, let's say 72 hours, when attorneys, particularly for Mr. Quarles, had asked for specific information. Mr. Frazier, according to documentation that will be presented to the public tomorrow during the press conference, Mr. Frazier said that the community, now I hope that I'm incorrect on this, is that people have taken his comments out of context, but then folks say they have emails and et cetera. But Mr. Frazier said the community was not deserved of any information relevant to KMOJ, its finances, its personnel policies, the future of the station, if you will, the whole rumor, again, a rumor that the organization under the leadership of Ms. Samuels, Sandra Samuels, has made an offer to Ackerberg to take possession of the entire building, which unfortunately would lead to the extrication of KMOJ from its facilities there on the top floor of that building, there on West Broadway and Penn. Now, for months, we've been hearing these allegations, and supporters of the board, oh, by the way, that was another question, an issue that came up. Maybe someone can text me, if you will, because we are not receiving any phone calls. Our phones work, but our lead technician, Mr. Allen, is not available tonight. And the reason I said that kind of tongue-in-cheek is because people have been questioning why they've not been able to get into KMOJ via phone, doing the on-air programs, such as the program involving community values, if you will. Mr. Alfred Flowers, who is the host of that show, apparently this past Sunday, indicated that there were problems with the phones. Lo and behold, upon further examination, it is being said that the technician who is contracted with by KMOJ to take care of the phones and et cetera, declined to respond or to work on the problem because he hadn't been paid, if you will. And we know this will all be cleared up. We know that rumors are part of what happens in a community, and so we just assume that there's been a momentary a break in the financial stream, because as I'm being told by associates in St. Paul, as an example, that Mr. Freddie Bell, who is now he's a station manager. I think the title of interim has been dropped. That Mr. Bell has been facilitating pay-as-you-come-in activities at Arnella's in St. Paul, a very popular African-American club. And one would think that the money's coming in just from that would certainly be able to sustain and help the station as it pertains to meeting its fiduciary financial obligation. Now, this press conference at 11 a.m. tomorrow morning in front of the radio station and the Ackerberg building could be very, very ugly, because emotions are running very, very high, if you will. It has become very, very, very personal with regards to this. We are just now receiving from one of our key sources, if you will. They have, and let me read this on the air. I will not read, of course, who the source is. The source is saying to us as we speak over the airwaves to our audience around the United States and across the world that Ackerberg has given KMOJ a notice of eviction because they are in arrears of rent. Now, I just have to assume that is incorrect, that just could not be a notice of eviction. And, of course, and also we're receiving now text messages are coming in that both Jeffrey Hassan and Stephen Belton, these are two very respected African-American leaders in our community, are leaving the press conference tomorrow and I received this exactly at 8:43 p.m., that they are leaving the press conference and will address some of these allegations that we are receiving here. There are a couple of messages coming in. So much for folks who talk in terms that nobody listens to blog radio. Man, I am just taken back. I want to go back to the message that I received from an extremely reliable source. And I repeat, if there is anyone that wants to challenge that and et cetera, of course, we would welcome the text messages. And I mean, they're coming in. But a statement declaration has been made that Ackerberg has served notice of eviction. Now, I got to tell you, if KMOJ has been given a notice to evict, given how difficult it is to find a new location for a radio station, if you will, I mean, that is frightening as it pertains to, oh, my God, we are here, our engineers waving. We have additional messages coming in. Message is saying, oh, there was was a secret meeting with a community group at the Urban League. Oh, my God. Again, these are text messages that are coming into us here on the Ron and Don program, if you will. We're trying to get, you know, a better feel, because we had heard Mr. Frazier and other, the board chair, indicate that KMLJ is extremely solvent. In other words, there is no problem with any aspect of their operation, and that information being put out which would imply otherwise is inconsistent, slanderous, and et cetera. Of course, I guess it was. But let's go back to this text message we just received. There was a secret meeting with a community group at the Urban League on Monday about dealing with and confronting legally what has happened with regards to radio station KMLJ and the collapse of negotiations with the Ackerberg Group. Now, Ackerberg, of course, is the developer who has developed a lot of property here in the city of Minneapolis, developed that piece of property there at West Broadway and Penn Avenue North, if you will. We would encourage some of those that are sending us these text messages to continue. Of course, that also means that anyone who desires to dispute the statements, allegations being made. Now, again, Mr. Hassan and Mr. Belton, the husband of former Mayor Shelton Sells Belton, two-time mayor of the city of Minneapolis in the 1990s. Mr. Hassan and Mr. Belton, by the way, let's keep this in mind, are both attorneys at law, registered and legally able to be involved in litigation in the state of Minnesota. I just don't see that anyone would even take a chance of raising these kinds of questions, if you will, and making these kinds of allegations. Of course, again, our text machines and et cetera are open. We repeat again, sources are indicating to us at this hour that the Ackerberg Group have served official notice upon radio station KMOJ indicating that eviction is about to take place. This is what they are saying at this particular time, if you will. And so, again, some kind of meeting on Monday. Now, the sources are saying that this was a secret meeting with a community group at the Urban League on Monday about the dealings and what is happening at KMOJ. Again, we repeat that the chairman of the board has indicated that he is not obligated to provide any information or documentation with regards to the future and the status of radio station KMOJ, a subsidiary of the Center for Communication and Development. Now, I would like, if anyone can name for me, feel free for those that have the text numbers for our operation, the names of the board members of the Center for Communication and Development, CCD. As we repeat again, the Center for Communication and Development is the parent of radio station KMOJ. We know that there were a couple of people who were on the board at the time that Mr. Qualls was terminated. They failed to meet the statutory requirements. We repeat this again, to meet the statutory requirements of the bylaws and the application for license filed many years ago, and the bylaws filed many years ago, with regards to the issue of quorum. Now, we understand that the attorneys for Mr. Qualls and others as well as attorneys Hassan, attorney Belton, attorney Reed, and others have maintained that they have examined with the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, the articles of incorporation, the application of, for licensing, filed with the FCC 40 years ago, and that there has been a egregious violation of the bylaws, as well as in the course of that, violating the constitutional rights of Mr. Quarles and others whose services were terminated based on an absence of fact. Now, this is something that we have been told by individuals who are very much involved in the courts here in Hennepin County, that there is not a preponderance of evidence that has been shown by the KMOJ's attorneys, whoever those attorneys are, that the burden of responsibility has been met by they, and that Mr. Quarles' attorneys and et cetera have failed to meet the necessary legal demand. Now, we're puzzled by that because we are very much aware of the entire process many years ago in the creation of radio station KMOJ, known as Komoja, if you will, actually five letters. One of the letters was dropped for the purposes of the call letters of the radio station at 89.9 on the dial. Now, we have always asked people if they can identify to us the original incorporators of radio station KMOJ, a subsidiary of the Center for Communication and Development. And many folks have extreme difficulty in identifying the incorporators. Of course, if you have the necessary documentation, as the radio station is required by FCC rules, of the original incorporators, there are at least one, two, three of the original incorporators who are still alive and could give testimony relevant. See, what starts happening when you start getting down to intent? What was the intention of the incorporators as they crafted the language, if you will, for both the application, the articles of incorporation, and the articles of affiliation, and et cetera? See, here's one of the things that bothers us, and we certainly, anyone that wants to send us a text on this and make, we are coming in left and right here. We were puzzled on how and when Mr. Frazier and the current board, which did not exist at the time of the termination of Mr. Quarles, where is their letter of petition to the FCC asking for permission to change, if you will, and circumvent the articles or certain language in the articles of incorporation and the application for license, because KMOJ was never supposed to ever be removed from public housing. In other words, if there was a public housing facility in the city of Minneapolis, KMOJ was going to be required to have its operation and studios in that facility. In fact, for years, that facility and that provision of the articles of incorporation and the application for license was being met by the facilitation of the operation of KMOJ along the 800 block of Bryant Avenue North. And even when they moved just down the street before that building that they moved into right there at, Newton or Knox or wherever, began to sink in the ground, big hole opened up in the roof, and then finally, for a period of time, KMOJ was located in South Minneapolis, if right there on Lake Street, for those that remember. Only problem was that they were then in violation of the provisions of the Articles of Incorporation and, more importantly, the application for licensing. And then arrangements were made with the Ackerberg Group as they were remodeling the facility, the building there at Penn Avenue North and West Broadway. Only problem is that is not a public housing facility. And so I would assume that tomorrow that attorneys Hassan, attorney Belton, other attorneys of record for the employees terminated will certainly be able to address that. And we are certainly opened here for any text messages that may be sent. We apologize. Unfortunately, Mr. Allen is not with us again this evening. And we also are being informed at this particular moment that a second series of shots, this is interesting, were fired into the school district's building there on West Broadway. The shots were fired into the Girard side on Monday and hit the fourth floor. The shots were on purpose. We are not authorized to indicate to you the discussion that took place over the last couple of days with the MPD and federal authorities, if you will. In fact, for those that work at the building and at 1250 West Broadway, know that the commander of the 4th Precinct, Amanda Jose, came to the school to reassure personnel inside of the facility that they are not the targets of any kind of terroristic threats. But I would be a little cautious and concerned, particularly in light of discussions last night at the YMCA in a community meeting in which Chief Jhené Harto was present, and then this afternoon at a library in South Minneapolis at this particular time, because of concerns about confidentiality that were asked for by some of the for-profit organizations. We will hold in abeyance some of the discussions that took place with representatives from a federal program that are currently in the city, have been working on the problem of restorative justice and et cetera for the last, since October of 2014. We repeat, October of 2014. We appreciate that text message coming in. We were, yes, aware that shots have been fired Monday, maybe even Tuesday, into the school district headquarters. And there's been some interesting discussion. Again, though, we have to put on our hat as a federal monitor, and we are not authorized to indicate what the intel is. But of course, as we all know, and particularly with the possibility that the African American community, after 50 years, will lose the voice of the people, if you will, if the eviction notice is upheld in Hennepin County Housing Court, if you will, and if they are forced, the KMOJ and the Center for Communication and Development, and let me put it in the right scenario. It is the Center for Communication and Development. KMOJ is merely a subsidiary of the Center for Communication and Development. If, in fact, eviction takes place, the FCC has apparently indicated that it has no choice but to, quote-unquote, disconnect KMOJ and to take it off of the air. I really hope that something can be worked out. And to one of the people that texted us about approximately 14 minutes ago, we are hoping that there will be some immediate resolution, if you will. If the amount of debt, back rent, is at the level that we are being told that it is, there will have to be a a significant and immediate infusion of monies to meet the prime obligation, and that is to satisfy the debt to the Ackerberg Group. Maybe negotiations can be held with Sandra Samuels and the Nas Group in regards to, and I know they do this because they just gave $311,000 to Mike Wynn and the Emerge Group to hire young African-Americans and et cetera to try to deal with this problem of violence. Certainly a outlay of $40,000 to $50,000 to take care of the rent, the back rent, and then maybe some kind of workable plan. I mean, it happens all the time in big white corporate America, if you will. I mean, you know, businesses are in trouble all the time, and there are all kinds of statutory procedures, rules, regulations that allows for assistance and et cetera. And so this comes at a very difficult time in our community. We, given the level of conflict, violence, and et cetera, as we reach the 9 o'clock hour, we'll be on for another half hour. We just cannot envision that our community will be absolutely silenced, if you will, and that basically we would have to provide information through blog radio, and in some cases, the benevolence, yes, the benevolence of a white community, which may or may not care about if we get any kind of information out, and then may impose certain conditions with regards to what can be reported. One of the things that we take pride in here on the Ron and Don program is that, to my knowledge, that there is no prohibition imposed upon us or even thought about imposing upon us control over our editorial comment, content, and et cetera. Though we have been told by individuals that that there have been discussions about the need to close down our the African-American communication system and control the flow of information to those of you in the African-American community, we strongly and vociferously oppose and resist that, if you will. But if KMOJ goes under, I mean, I think in terms of programs such as Alfred Flowers, Jeffrey Hassan, and the African-American Forum, and et cetera, the longtime community voice and historian, the respected Mahmoud El-Khati, who would be forever silenced, if you will, as well as any other and every other program on KMOJ. Again, I'm hoping that at the press conference tomorrow, again, the press conference at 11 a.m. Central Daylight Time, in front of the Ackerberg Building, the headquarters of the Center for Communication and Development and its subsidiary, radio station KMOJ, that we will hear some clear and concise enunciations with regard to what the heck is going on. Now, we have to go back to, and we have been texted with four other texts from different numbers that indicate that the first text about eviction and et cetera is correct, and that there are documents on file in the Hennepin County District Housing Court which will support the fact that the Ackerberg Group has made that specific move. We cannot impose upon you, our listening audience and others, the danger, particularly at a time of the national election with the juggernaut movement of Donald Trump and the conservative right, if you will, with the dangers that are emerging in this country and have been that we would have taken away from us here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, the only voice that we really have to the extent of commercial communication, commercial radio, and et cetera, that 24-hour service, if you will, of communication, the ability for people to call in on the many programs that air over that station at any time, if you will, hour of the day, to cut our community off totally, absolutely, from having any ability to express our concern. I mean, we certainly are not going to expect the Star Tribune to do anything in our favor, and we know that at best we may get 12 seconds of prime time on all of the so-called television stations, CCO, KMSP, CARE, and et cetera. But I want you to give some thought to that tonight, my friends, on this particular program, how close, perilously close we are. And that is the reason that we certainly await the press conference and the pronouncement by two men who are heading up two organizations that are crucial to our community, the African American Forum, if you will, as well as the Urban League of Minneapolis, because we need to hear from these individuals who have been in discussions and negotiations, as was just was text to us about 18 minutes ago, talking in terms of the future of the Center for Communication and Development and radio station KMOJ. Now, I know there are folks out there who talk in terms that everything is okay. We are well aware and remember just a couple of weeks ago a front page story in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, a paper in which we are columnists, which talked about how well things were going. I was kind of uneasy as a journalist and a historian that came across and was amplified in that manner, knowing that there were significant problems and knowing that some very serious negotiations had been going on for months. You know, we're not talking about something that just happened in the last week and a half as it pertains to Mr. Quarles, as it pertains to the role being played by the attorneys that we previously named who stepped up to the plate, the kind of meetings that had been taking place, the kind of rancoredness that has emerged with Mr. Frazier and his associates on one side, indicating, as we said earlier on this program, that they have no responsibility, legally or otherwise, I totally and thoroughly disagree, to convey anything to the community, if you will, with regards to the state of the business entity, if you will, / communication entity, if you will, / training entity, because that's the other thing, and that's the reason that the Center for Communication and Development was brought into creation and fruition, was to train bright young minds and voices, male and female, primarily African Americans, to carry the message. In fact, I can well remember 30 years ago, significant discussions and reflections about sending these talented young African Americans out into the vineyards, if you will, to challenge the KSTPs, the CCOs, if you will, the different major radio stations, the WDGYs, KSTP, CCO, and et cetera, to begin to hire this talent, because by and large, we are just about as white now, absent KMOJ. We are as white now as we basically were in the 1960s when a group, and get this, my friends, public housing residents sat down and put together the narrative and the documentation and filed the necessary documents with the FCC in Washington, D.C. And we're talking now, you know, 1965, 66, as we saw the development of really a 100-watt station, if you will, in which the broadcasters used to broadcast from an apartment that was given to them, the station, by the Minneapolis Housing Authority. And the studio was the kitchen. And the table was a kitchen table with the engineer sitting at one end and the commentator, whoever they were back in those days, at the other end, if you will. I mean, if sometimes people used to laugh, and I hope that I'm not giving out this kind of history as, quote-unquote, the death knell for something that this community must preserve. But I can remember people used to laugh and talk in terms of going under the wrong bridge or parking their car too close to a light post and not hearing that 100-watt station. Not 1,000 watts, my friend, 100 watts. In fact, at one point, they actually thought that maybe we could get the station up and running at 50 watts. And I can well remember the FCC saying, you got to, you know, the matrix system in America is 100 watts because you have a commercial nonprofit license, if you will. And so it is almost deja vu, if you will, to the memory of some of the original incorporators, if you will, all women, except for a male that was involved with them and served as special consultant and advisor to them. But the actual women who sat down and really said, we need to have this station, if you will, we need to have a voice, were all women, if you will. Four African Americans and one Caucasian. And I imagine there's a lot of folk out there that are surprised at what I just said and probably could not, unfortunately, name not only the Caucasian, but they can't name the four African-American women. And that is sad because just as we used to talk about Ms. Holman and the whole history of the Holman lawsuit and et cetera, because we don't have a museum of history and et cetera. And as people pass on to the other side and leave this life and et cetera, much of our history and information leaves with them, if you will. And so people don't know the struggle. And we're talking about, as we now reach the hour of 9:12 p.m. Central Daylight Savings Time, that we're not talking about a group of women, four black, one Caucasian, one male. Male is not important. It was these women, all who resided in public housing, who took up the mantle of access, communication, the desire for voices to be heard. Man, this was during the romantic time of the civil rights struggles, the revolution of the 1960s. I can remember some of the people that were first on KMOJ back in the day, if you will. And they brought the thundering voice over that 100-watt station a couple years later. Upon petition to the FCC, KMOJ was granted and authorized to go to 1,000 watts, if you will. The KMOJ never had the kind of modern equipment to even be able to run a transmitter and et cetera so that there was a full 1,000 watts. I can remember the dream in this community 40 years ago that ultimately we'd be able to go to 10,000, even 25,000. 25,000 watts, you know, right up there with the big boys and et cetera. It has not happened, and I'm not sure that, unfortunately, given the economic despair that has now gripped our beloved community and the fact that we are basically, with the exception of being put in jail and incarcerated, we are at the bottom of the totem pole with everything that has to do with the survival and the existence of a race of people, you know. No jobs, no education, if you will, no housing, the whole thing of violence. We repeat again, for those that don't know, because Star Tribune's not going to give it to you. And it appears that what is happening at KMOJ, that they are under some kind of quarantine, not to provide the kind of necessary news outlet that was present under Mr. Quarles and others prior to him, that you're not getting the information that you need to get, you know. And communication is so important with regards to the survival of a people and of a race. And so, you know, again, as we move into the last 15 minutes, if you will, or 14 minutes of tonight's program, we want to continue to push. You know, if there's any additional information out there, feel free to text us, if you will. We look forward to Mr. Belton and to Mr. Jeffrey Hassan, two men that I have known for a long, long time. In fact, I knew Mr. Hassan when he came into this world, if you will, when he became a member, quote unquote. I can well remember. I knew his father and his older brother, David Goodlow, and et cetera. And I know that these men will not misfeed us. They will not misguide us. Are we in trouble as the African-American community with regards to one of the most precious jewels that we have? And we don't have many jewels, if you will. I can well remember as a young man, 12, 13 years old in this community, 1951, 52, 53, I can remember as we lost the economic jewel that was the cornerstone of a growing and vibrant African-American, or as we were referred to back in those days, Negro community, 6th Avenue North. It's flourishing businesses, if you will. The gentleman known as M, who is a frequent caller to this program, has identified for us a man by the name of Walter Scott, who along with Norton Smith were two of the most outstanding, if you will, facilitators of historical events through pictorial, if you will. And I can remember the fine photographs and et cetera, which showed the many businesses of the African-American community, the Negro community in that period from 1922 until 1952-53, when, quote-unquote, under the guise of white progress, if you will, and white development, we lost our economic community, as did our brother and sister in St. Paul, who lost Rondo and Dale, if you will, who lost that economic prosperity that community had enjoyed for a like period of time. I have to tell you, my friends, as a historian, that once you lose a jewel, once you lose that you have worked so hard to bring into play and to create for your people and for your future and for your children and et cetera, when you lose that, particularly when you are seen as the enemy because of the color of your skin, if you will, that you do not deserve anything but to be returned to the dark dungeons of slavery and nullification and omission and et cetera. You just do not understand, my friends, the difficulty, the struggle, the pain that one feels as one tries to regain foothold on what has become a slippery mountainside, if you will. In some places, Duluth comes into mind after the violence of 1920 and the lynching and murder and mutilation of African Americans and et cetera, and Tulsa, Oklahoma, and places like that. Sometimes you never are able to recover. And then if you see your history washed off the wall, removed from the books, and the books removed from the shelves and removed from the libraries and et cetera, then we speak first to ourselves and then to our children and our grandchildren and to our friends and the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren of our friends from a position of ignorance And I just hope that tomorrow will bring us a better vision as we listen to leadership in that press conference, which we assume will take place at 11 a.m. in front of the Ackerberg building, that we will be told that there is a plan, that things are being worked out, and that KMOJ is going to survive, that it is not going to be evicted, that it will be removed from the history books and the pages of history. So we look at a situation where maybe even 5 years, definitely 10 years from now, when you talk about KMOJ, people are asked you, are you talking in Swahili? What are you talking about? Kamoja? What is Kamoja? We cannot allow ourselves to be pushed into that crevice and pushed over the edge of the cliff to fall to our deaths because we have failed once again. There is too much failure going on, and I must tell you that far too many of our young people who are much more inclined than we want to believe understand that there's been too much failure. And they're not hearing the necessary explanations from us, who should at least know and understand the history on why failure and failure and failure has become the order of the day, my friends. And so in closing, let me do, though, the positive tonight. And actually, we had was going to spend much more time on this because it was so positive, if you will. But with the strife and et cetera that's coming, the school headquarters building being fired on by gunmen, if you will, the violence and shootings in the streets, people seeing no hope, fathers of young men who were gunned down in the streets of our city committing suicide because they see no hope, and et cetera. But tonight I want to send out from this program and from Blog Radio congratulations to LeBron James, King James. If there was ever a man who was worthy of joining Muhammad Ali, Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, and others who did everything they could in forecasting better times for the sons and daughters of the African, it was LeBron James. Let no one in your presence, my friends, the sons and daughters of the African, take away or insult what LeBron James accomplished just a couple days ago. He was a man who for 13 years as a player in the National Basketball Association, the NBA, has been subject, as has been the president of these United States, Barack Obama, first and maybe for the next 50 years, last African-American to be elected to the presidency of these United States of America. But LeBron James, upon his departure from Miami, indicating that he was returning home to his beloved Ohio and to the city of Cleveland, made a promise. He put the world upon his shoulders, and he put that part of the world, which is Ohio and Cleveland and the loyal fans of the Cleveland Cavaliers franchise, he put them on his shoulders. And he said to them, this is what I promise you I will do. And white folks and some blacks ridiculed him and dismissed him as a crazy Negro, if you will. But what he did in this 2015-2016 NBA season was one for the ages. And in fact, in our column in the Spokesman Recorder next week, we indicate that, and this is just us, we reserve the right to indicate what we are feeling and what we feel we see in whatever vision it is that we declare that we sought. That we saw the hand of God on one side and Muhammad Ali on the other, touching the shoulders in the seventh game of the NBA Finals in 2016. We saw their hands upon the shoulders of LeBron James, lifting him up to not only victory, but to a absolute successful completion of the promise he made to a state and to a city and to the people and to himself, that he was going to bring a title home. One cannot understand, really, in the last 4 minutes of tonight's program, what it is that one has to accomplish in doing what LeBron James did. But what he did and what his coach, let us not forget his coach, an African-American. I don't know when it is the last time that we have seen an African-American coach in the NBA leading up a successful venture on behalf of his franchise / team. And that little brother, if you will, little in the terms of basketball, from Mexico, Missouri. And by the way, I know a number of people from Mexico, Missouri. Talked to some over the last couple of days. Man, they are so proud, and they feel so great, if you will. And for those that know the racial history of Mexico, Missouri, you have to understand when you talk and listen to the old-timers, if you will, how satisfied and gracious they feel with regards to a native son, Tyrone Lai. And so LeBron James and his compadres, if you will, a complexion of men who believed, they believed in LeBron James. LeBron James believed in himself. And the people of Ohio and sports fans who are for real believed in LeBron James. But still, there always had to be that nagging thought in the back of your mind. I mean, can this brother really do this? And in our column in the Spokesman Recorder next week, our headline says, LeBron, LeBron, LeBron. And then the furtherance of that is, brother, don't know how you did it, but you did it. And you brought pride, and you brought respect, and you brought an appreciation and love from the African-American community. You made us feel that we are clearly worthy of making a declaration and saying this is something that we want to do. It shows that if the African-American, the sons and daughters of the African, as we go into the last minute of tonight's program, it's given the opportunity and the chance to excel, to exceed, and to meet the standard and the demands of excellence, that, my God, we can do that. And in the passing of Muhammad Ali, who we probably thought we would never see someone who would be able to say that I'm the greatest. Well, lo and behold, as we said just minutes ago, the hands of Muhammad Ali on one shoulder and the good Lord on the other lifted LeBron James up so that we in the African American community, we the sons and daughters of the African, will be able to look out and look across the aisle at our detractors to let them know that we still have a champion. We have a man that has once again made us believe. And hopefully, in closing, and thank you for being with us tonight, that spirit will renew itself and rekindle itself in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. If it doesn't, and if nothing happens tomorrow to give us hope, God help us. For it means that our destiny has been sealed, our fate is known, and our demise is guaranteed. God bless you, and power to the people.